Welcome to the Connected Insurance Podcast, presented by Agency Revolution. Listen to interviews with the most influential people in the insurance industry. Learn the most important strategies, tactics, trends, and challenges facing today's independent insurance agents and brokers. New episodes every Wednesday. Visit agencyrevolution.com and click media to explore the Connected Insurance family of resources for insurance agents and brokers. Subscribe today and get updates delivered right to your inbox. And now, without further delay, the Connected Insurance Podcast.
Hello, everybody. This is Michael Janz, co-founder of Agency Revolution, where we automate your systems, engage your customers, and help you grow your agency. And I want to welcome you to this episode of the Connected Insurance Podcast, where it's our job to find the geniuses, innovators, movers, and shakers in the industry and to discern and deconstruct what they do to help you grow your agency faster. And that's the case today. I think we have a home run guest, longtime friend of mine, full disclosure, been a client of mine off and on for years and years, and a client of Agency Revolution, Ellie Kaplansky. If you are anywhere in one of the New England states, you know the name Kaplansky Insurance. If you're an insurance consumer in Massachusetts, in other words, if you live and breathe in Massachusetts, you probably know the name Kaplansky Insurance. Not unlikely that if you have been part of my universe, my world, my network, my community, you know the name Ellie Kaplansky because he's been a speaker at previous events that I've held, and he's certainly been a guest at lots of events. And so a lot of people know Ellie, and I think everybody who does certainly respects what he has done. So you're about to listen to a master class on how to go from zero to $80 million, because that's the true story. I'll let you do a little bit of math here. $80 million in premium. Now, do this math. You can make a reasonable estimate of annual commission income. Now you can do a little bit of division, 75 employees. That's a really impressive. For what's largely a personal lines agency, mostly, that's a pretty impressive revenue per employee number. Add to that, now the fun starts, is that in the best practices model, published by Reagan and distributed by the Big I, both previous podcast guests and both very good friends of ours and friends of mine. Ellie's EBITDA is in the top 5% of pro forma. So you can make your own, draw your own assumptions based on the math, but this is a guy that you want to understand. You want to understand his model. You want to understand his thinking. And ideally understand what it's like to do what he does. What are the behaviors of somebody that successful? I hope I delivered them. I think so. And Ellie was, he held nothing back. He's very, very generous with his expertise. He's the chairperson of the Big I in Massachusetts. So he's just flat out well-respected everywhere you go in the insurance industry. I know that from carriers. I know that from his peers, from agents. I know that from associations and so forth. So you're about to be treated to a master class in growth. And you will see he made a key decision early on in his career. It's a concept that I have spoken about to agents for over 25 years, essentially the principle of working on your business, not just in your business. He made the decision and stuck with it. He hasn't written a policy in 35 years. He is a business builder. So a couple of things that I want to say prior to introducing you to Ellie, I want to deliver to you agents and other people in the industry or even outside the industry who you think can deliver real value to our audience. So if there's somebody that comes to mind, gosh, I wish Michael would have that guy or that person as a guest. Well, I can't read your mind, so let me know. You can email me, michael@agencyrevolution.com. Say, hey, would you go try to go get this guy? It actually helps me recruit guests when I say, my listeners are demanding that we get you in front of a microphone. That does help. So reach out and let me know who you want. This is your podcast. I'm just here as your servant. So help me do my job better. Second thing that I wanted to say before I hand you over to Ellie is I don't know that I've mentioned this before. Co-author of a new book, and it's a bestseller. And because it's about what's happening in the insurance industry right now, I think everybody should have a copy of it. By the way, full disclosure, I don't make a dime off of this, and neither does any other co-author. We all entered into this project with the decision that all resources would go towards the creation and the delivery and the design of an excellent book, which it is. It's called The InsurTech Book, published by the publicly traded and international publisher Wiley, and now available on Amazon. So for those of you serious students of the industry who really want to know what's going on with InsurTech, what is that $10 billion designed to do? How is it going to possibly threaten us? And what are those things that we should be aware of that might help us? Then you need to get a copy of the book. So get on Amazon, buy the InsurTech book, and would love to get your feedback. Would love your feedback on my chapter. My chapter, as you can probably imagine, if it is not the, it is certainly a essay and argument for the strength and the support of the independent insurance agency system and how technology can help that system. So now, without further ado, I should say one last thing. Sorry. Something weird happened during somewhere, I don't remember when, but in the middle of my interview with Ellie. We lost our phone connection. And so you're going to hear Adrian, my producer, is going to have to splice it together and it's going to sound wacky. But in full disclosure, that's exactly what happened. Funny things happen out here in the Sonoran Desert, in the casita. It is the world's most peaceful casita and the world's most beautiful place, in competition, of course, with many others. I'm sure you have your favorite places. But we are really quite remote. As clients who have been here, usually they don't even want to come into the casita. They want to just stand out or sit in my courtyard and stare at the view. We're pretty remote, and funny things can happen to my internet connections. Funny things can happen to phone. I don't know what it was, but in any case, you'll hear a little weird splicing together. No big deal. All righty. Now, that being said, it really is a pleasure and an honor to introduce you to this conversation with one of the greats, one of the Hall of Famers in the insurance industry, Ellie Kaplansky. Ellie Kaplansky, thank you so much for joining us today. How are you?
I'm doing great, thank you. Pleasure to talk to you.
All righty. So, Ellie, we've known each other for quite a while. This isn't our first rodeo. And obviously, you've been at the top of my list as agents to admire. And I'm not saying that just to swell your head, but you've done some things uniquely. And you made some decisions early on, which I think probably have affected your career for, I'm embarrassed to say, I don't know how many years, but some decades. So what I'd like to do in this conversation is walk through what some of those fundamental decisions were and then kind of break it down and identify what some of the key strategies are that got you from close to zero to where you are now. So first thing I'll ask you, Ellie, is real quick thumbnail, just very, very brief. How did you get into this industry, and when did you do that?
Okay, well, I can tell you, it wasn't close to zero, it was zero.
Okay.
But, I have a little bit of an unusual story. When I was in middle school and high school, I was really kind of bored with school, and I just didn't... I think I always wanted to get out there and work, and I've worked since I was 11 years old, I think. I got into the insurance industry by mistake, as everybody does, unless it's a family business.
Right.
I had a friend that worked at an insurance agency part-time after school. He was a few years older than me, he got me a job working in the agency business part time, and I did that. And then summertime came around, and they offered me a full time job, and they taught me how to write auto insurance, and I was actually doing that at that point. And then in my senior year, I had about 2 months of high school left,
yeah.
And that agency had an opening, and they offered me a full-time job, and I took it. I said, well, I can always go back and finish, you know, two months of high school. Well, I never got around to that. I ended up working for that agency for probably a couple of years, and then I got out of the business, believe it or not, at like 19 years old, started a, don't ask me how this happened, but started an advertising agency, sort of fundraising and advertising, did that for about a year, and that was my first failure, failure is my friend. I learn way more from failure than I do from success.
Right.
And anyway, I got another opportunity to work for an insurance agency, and I did that for about a year. And while working for that agency, I was probably like, you know, 20, 21, I was working for that agency, and it turns out they were doing some things that I certainly considered to be unethical. So I said, you know, I can just open up down the street from them, start my own agency, and run the business the way it should be run.
Fair enough.
Of course, I had no idea what I was doing, but I was licensed. I had been licensed for a few years. I had $2,000 in the bank. I needed a loan for $4,000, which my parents co-signed for, and I took the $6,000, rented a storefront, and sat there very lonely for a few years. I went out there, pounded the pavement, and it took me a long time before I could really get any kind of company contracts. One thing led to another, and you know, here I am today. And it really took about 10 years for the agency to really have any kind of real markets and to be competitive, and things just went from there. So that's really how I got my start.
Okay. So let me ask you a question,
yeah.
Ellie. So that's, I think the audience is going to be curious about the path from A to B. And so if that's A and today is B, so to speak, can you give us a very brief description of what the agency looks like today? And then we're going to break down what the path was to get there.
Okay. Well, today we're doing about $80 million in premium, roughly about 75 employees, and we have 14 locations. We represent, you know, probably 35 companies as an agent and do business with over 200 on a brokerage basis.
Mm-hmm.
We're a generalist. We're a little bit more personal lines. We're about 65-70% personal lines, very little life and health. We're working on an affiliation, and that has never been our thing. But we do a lot of commercial lines, even though it's only about a third of our business, because we do a lot of small commercial.
Right.
And then we do have a separate division that does handle large commercial accounts. Our model is not really to go out after that business. Most of our large accounts we have acquired through acquisition.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
That's okay. Hey, people should know that these podcasts are created in real life, so I'm okay with that.
That's right.
Hey,
Yoshi,
my Australian Shepherd is snoring right next to me, and hopefully that's not coming across in the microphone.
I asked somebody to call me.
Okay.
So
the agency is obviously quite successful, and I this is a presumption, maybe wrong, but probably the largest privately owned agency in Massachusetts now.
Yes,
okay.
It is.
All right.
And not just privately owned, by but individually owned. Just I own 100% of the stock.
Right.
That's a little bit unusual.
Okay, very good.
So there's a relatively big
Gap between A, starting, and B, where we are now. And in addition to your work as the owner of the insurance agency, you also are pretty active in the community and you're active in the industry. You've got, you're now the president of the Big I in Massachusetts, right?
The chairman.
I'm the chairman
this year. I've been on the board now for 10 years and worked my way up through to this position, and it's been very informative, very exciting. I've gotten way more out of it than I put into it, and I've met some great people. So it's something I've really enjoyed being involved with.
All right. So here's my sequence, because I because of that role and just because of your experience in the industry, before we're done, I would like to get your perspective on how you think the future looks and how agents should probably strategically respond to the different trends and forces. But for now, what I'd like to do is walk through, you know, kind of going back to the early days when you did make some strategic decisions. So one of my observations, Ellie, is that you began to function very early on as an entrepreneur, more than as an insurance agent, or as I sometimes like to call it, an insurapreneur. And on one hand, I've talked about that for 25 years to insurance agents, and a number have embraced that concept. Unfortunately, far fewer have executed on that concept. Even, frankly, among agents that I've worked with fairly closely, it seems at times to be very difficult not to get swept up into the whirlwind of being an agent and, of course, being a producer and being responsible for personal production. You took a different tack. So can you kind of take us back to what it was like? You were a young man back then, and you made a strategic decision about whether or not you were going to be writing insurance policies.
Well, yeah. The thing about the insurance business that I liked is the business, not selling insurance policies. Now, I had to do that for many years, but it wasn't what it was all about for me. For me, it was about creating a business, and, I sort of felt like whether I was selling widgets or insurance, I still would run it as a business.
Mm-hmm.
It took me probably about, I don't think I've sold an insurance policy for 35 years probably, and
right
I've
on.
Been in the business.
Yeah. Okay.
40.
So you were young. I'm curious where you got that insight to, you know, that you felt that you could grow the agency more by working on the business and not working so much in the business.
Where it came from, I've always been entrepreneurial.
Okay.
During that, for instance, I've owned at least five other businesses, probably actually more, quite frankly, none of them succeeded. Some of them did for a while. I was in the car rental and leasing business. We had a partner with a towing business, and those were services that we provided to our insurance clients. So
right.
There was a crossover with that. But they actually ended up growing on their own. They were originally designed. I purchased a travel agency to try to provide those services
right.
to our insurance clients. And I've also owned three restaurants, and I put that under the heading of the things we do for love, because my wife, that's her passion, and she's run three restaurants, which I've partnered with, and if anybody wants to invest in her next restaurant, please let me know, because I won't be.
You'll step out of the way. Okay.
Yeah.
All
right. Absolutely.
So.
So, over the years, I realized that this is what I do. This is what I do best. I've abandoned all those other ventures, concentrated again on growing this business. Early on, I started opening up additional locations from scratch. I had four locations at one point. Mm-hmm. And then we sort of, operated that way for a while. I want to say it was around 1980, I had an opportunity to buy a local agency down the street. I wasn't looking to buy an agency, but one of my employees knew the owner, and he was selling, and we did that. And that was 1980. August 1st, we're closing on our 30th acquisition. So that's been really the real secret behind our success is growth by acquisition. But at the same time, we pay very, very close attention to organic growth. We have goals. You gotta pay attention.
I wanted to zero in on that because I think I don't want people to get the impression, because Ellie, you've got a great reputation as being a private and acquirer of other agencies. I know better. While I know that that has been remarkably, substantially important to the growth of the agency, you are also a best practices agency. You follow the Reagan best practices. It's my understanding that in terms of your margins, your EBITDA, you're at the top 5%. So I wanted to stress the fact that while acquisition has been important, your focus really has also been on quality management and organic growth.
Absolutely. If we're going to grow, we need to retain our customers. Our single largest source of new business is still referrals. As much as we do so much marketing and online and mm-hmm. websites and radio advertising, referrals and account rounding is our largest source of business. So we've got to make sure we're doing a good job for our clients.
Got it.
And we got to make sure we're keeping our employees happy in order to do that. So it's a it's all a challenge for sure. That's something that, like I say, it's very easy to get caught up in the acquisition process, but you just have to really pay attention to the day-to-day business and the organic growth, and particularly with the direct writers, taking up market share. Massachusetts has been a challenge. We were the last state that the direct writers weren't in. Last five or ten years, they've come in and taken up a lot of our market share. But we're still, basically what we're seeing, and we're seeing this at our association level. The number of agents in our association each year is dropping.
Because Ellie's buying them, but I suppose there's
and it's not just me. It's just what we're seeing is fewer and larger agencies, but the number of desktops isn't changing a whole lot.
Right.
So when we buy an agency, we keep the staff, we keep the location, depending on size, and the number of people in the industry is not changing a lot, but certainly the number of agencies is, and that trend is no question that's going to continue.
Yeah.
I see it at my end. I mean, obviously the big players, the private equity companies and the nationals, and there isn't a week or two goes by that somebody's not calling me looking to acquire.
Okay. So, well, as long as we're on this subject, and acquisition is important, that environment has changed dramatically since, not just since you and I have been in the industry, but frankly, pretty dramatically in the last, let's say, 5 years. An upcoming podcast guest of mine is the founder of one of those large private equity firms that's buying a lot of agencies. How do you think that affects the life and the job of being an agency principal today? Valuations are up, and the pace of acquisition is, I think, the highest it's ever been.
Well, it is. There's no question about it. And it's a combination of the private equity money being there. And I think, that's driven somewhat by interest rates. I think we're going to see rates go up, and we'll see what happens to valuations and to the demand. Yeah. But the other factor is that the average age of agency owners is up there pretty good. So there's a combination.
Big, right, yeah. There are a lot of people ready to sell. Okay. And so let's say Ellie was starting now, okay? You know, let's say it's not 2018, but it's, a few decades ago. And if you were in this environment now with, probably less resource and perhaps less of a brand as a trusted acquisition partner, what would you do? So I'm asking on behalf of my listeners, what counsel would you give agencies who are have to compete against private equity and are challenged in doing that?
Well, are you talking about actually starting a new agency?
Well,
now?
I think at least I was thinking the smaller agency or the younger agent who wants to grow and wants to grow by acquisition. So let's start with that one.
Well, okay. The smaller agencies, and if they're not family businesses, chances are that they're going to sell. And depending on the size, we've sort of found a niche in terms of the size of agencies that we acquire.
Right.
We've acquired agencies as small in terms of income, say like $300,000 in income,
right,
up to maybe $1.2 million in income.
Mm-hmm.
And we've kind of found that niche, and we're very competitive in that arena. And we do look at larger agencies. We've made offers on agencies in the $3-4 million range, but now we're competing with these major players who have extremely deep pockets, and we find it hard to compete for acquisitions with the larger agencies. But we do a real good job with these smaller agencies. Many of them are retirement situations.
Right.
And in some cases, the sellers do stay on with us, and we've had some success with that. More often, we have not had success with sellers staying on. My favorite thing when somebody asked me about keeping a seller on it is that sellers do not make good employees. I'm not sure that I would. They think they want to stay on. They want to produce. They want to, they don't.
Right.
But it really, for us, it really works because they're so, you're used to a certain type of lifestyle and freedom. And so particularly in these smaller agencies. But if it's a retirement situation, then it's simple. They'll stay on as a consultant for a period of time, but with no major commitments. For smaller, I've seen, of course, some of the aggregators in our area. One of the biggest ones is the Renaissance Group, Bruce Cochran, and they're doing a terrific job for a lot of small agents providing product and services. Of course, Sand Group is one of the largest in the country. So that is one way that smaller agents can go. Starting an agency today, I think, would be very, very challenging. Most of the startups that we see tend to be in the tech world, and we're all still waiting to see where all that is going to go.
Right.
We know it's happening. My feeling about the independent agency system, which obviously I'm a major supporter, is that a lot of these smaller agencies really have to wake up and realize that, the days, you go out, you write a piece of business, you've got to be able to...
All right, we're back. And in full disclosure to the audience, we lost our connection. We have no idea why. So my question to Ellie is, if you're a smaller agency and wanted to grow by acquisition, what would you do about that today when there is some fairly substantial and challenging competition for the acquisition of agencies?
Well, I have to say, I think it is harder for a smaller agency to acquire. Same thing, like I say, when we start looking at agencies that are doing $3-4 million in income, it's very difficult for us to compete.
Right. Okay.
But smaller agencies, there are a number of agencies like myself out there that do acquisitions on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard for an individual small agency to compete.
Right.
A lot of them are involved with the aggregators, as I think I said. I don't know if that could cut out, but they can do it. They can
okay.
do it, but they have to be aggressive. Money is available. Insurance companies will lend for acquisitions. There certainly are banks and the specialty banks that are out there that the InsureBank and Oak Street
right,
and those guys.
Right. Okay.
So buying is one thing and operating is the other thing. So again, it's running a business, and I think if you're primarily a producer, if you're the main producer in the agency, it's going to be difficult for you to go out and buy agencies because, like I said, then you've got to operate the thing and manage it, unless you've got some really good people that can do that for you. But,
yeah.
I would think that's challenging.
Well, then let's talk about probably something that's on everybody's mind, regardless of size, which is getting to the next level through organic growth. So there are a number of things, Ellie, that you've done that I think have been important strategically. So I'm gonna tick these off kind of one at a time, and I'd like to get your response. So one is that, and by the way, the audience should know, in full disclosure, you and I have known each other for how many years?
I've
lost track, but...
Let me put it this way. I think I used to use your Yellow Page ads.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm not even sure you were purchasing my services back then. So that does go back to the early 2000s or before. So in any case.
I still have a collection of all your CDs.
Oh, yeah. Okay. you and thousands of agents around the country, the CDs and newsletters are probably all stacked up on the side of the desk. Okay. So you have maximized contingencies. That's been an important part of your strategy. Talk to us about how you did that.
Okay. That's critical. And that takes a lot of time to really analyze your books. And maximize your contingencies, your income, additional bonuses that you can negotiate. But quite frankly, that takes volume. Smaller agencies don't, on an individual
right.
basis, just don't have the kind of volume to do that. But basically, when we acquire agencies, we move books of business. We clean up books of business sometimes. Then we're constantly looking at our numbers and making sure that we're meeting our growth goals, because a lot of our contracts require a certain growth in order to be eligible for profit sharing.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, and again, with the number of companies that we have, it's a very time-consuming thing. It's very involved. But even with a smaller agency, we buy agencies, and we see that they do not really pay attention they just want to write business. Most of them would like to write good business, but that's not always the case.
Right.
But one of the reasons you mentioned earlier, our EBITDA. One of the reasons it's where it is because we earn a lot of income through other than commissions,
right.
Or fees. Our profit sharing bonuses. We have a relationship with, and again, we're an unusual model. We have a relationship with one company where they have approximately 35 to 40% of our entire book of business.
Right.
And we are one of their largest agents in the country, and that gives us the opportunity to maximize profitability for them and for us.
Right.
And again, not everybody can do it, but you can do it on a smaller scale. I keep repeating it, that, you know, if you're out there selling insurance all the time, there are only so many hours in a day, and it's hard to do that.
Okay. So in addition to maximizing your contingencies, I think you've also, and again, this might be the benefit of volume, but you've negotiated other incentives, some bonuses or commission overrides, things like that, with certain carriers. Is that right?
We have, yeah. And again, that takes it takes volume. But one of my favorite quotations is, "If you don't ask, the answer is always no." But it's a two-way street. If you're going to ask for additional incentives, and again, you're not asking for anything for free, but if you're asking for additional incentives, you've got to earn them. But if you don't ask, it's not going to happen.
All right. So for the agent who's perhaps, Ellie, where you were, you know, whenever, 20, 25 years ago, but they're, you know, they're younger and they're looking at the opportunities in this industry, clearly, it's a different environment. So I'd like to break this down. What do you think is different about being an insurance agent today than it was, you know, let's say in 1995?
Well, very clearly, and this is really, our model is that you have to be a hybrid now. You can't just be that typical independent agent open from 9 to 5. You have to be able to provide services to your clients really 24/7. Mm-hmm. You have to be able you have to have the right agency management systems. I know of this great company that does websites called Agency Revolution.
Right.
You need to have a great website, and it has to be interactive. It has. We use CSR 24. Mm-hmm. We are in the process right now of outsourcing 24/7 texting and live calls. So we're trying to create an environment where if the client wants to come in and needs a hug or needs questions answered personally, we're here for them. You know, and that's the 9 to 5 part. But on the other hand, you know, we have to be able to provide all those other services 24/7. And I think that goes for every independent agent. The small agents, those services are now, the pricing is coming down on a lot of them.
Right.
They're available. It takes time to go through the process, get everything set up. But regardless of what size you are, if you're not doing that, particularly as our population ages, that's going to, I think... If I'm not mistaken, I think it might have even been information you provided me once at one of your meetings, I think at the time, it's probably greater now, 70% of all insurance quotation inquiries start from a mobile device. And so you've got to have an app. You've got to have all these things. You've got to look and feel like a direct writer, but at the same time, again, and this is the differentiation, is you can still provide that personal service, which you don't get with the bigger players.
Ellie, when we I look at the industry, I see agents who are perhaps millennials or Gen Xers. They're willing to embrace new technologies. They were raised with technology, and they're very comfortable with it. And oftentimes we'll see the older generation, the baby boomers, less comfortable, less willing to take a to test or experiment or have an adventure with a technology. You, however, I mean, obviously you're a boomer, not a millennial. You seem to have at least, I don't know if it's courage or a willingness or what, but you clearly have embraced technologies that have supported your scaling. How did that come about?
You have to take risks.
Yeah.
It takes money to spend money. Because I look at so many agencies, I mentioned the number that I've bought. It's four or five times as many that I have looked at and haven't bought.
So I've
looked at a lot of agencies,
right.
And I see how they operate. And nobody leaves money in the business. They take it out. It's
right.
Understandable. But you got to spend money. I mean, we do a lot of radio advertising. You know, when we started doing radio advertising, for years there was nothing. But you got to stick with it. If you're doing, and we still do. This is kind of old-fashioned, but we still do postcard mailings.
Fair enough.
But we set them
right.
up.
Yeah.
We set them up for certain types of situations, and we outsource it, and we commit to a 2-year program where the postcard goes out every quarter for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And usually we don't start seeing any business from it until at least the third or fourth. But again, you have to take risk. You have to spend money, but a lot of small agents, they don't want to do that because they're making a comfortable living, and they're not. In many cases, they're not working that hard, so they don't have this urge to grow.
Yeah. You'd said that you've looked at four or five times as many agencies that you have not purchased as those that you have purchased. So you've had a really interesting seat or position in the industry where you kind of have had an opportunity to look at the inside of a lot of agencies. And of course, as chairman of the Big Eye, you also have this perspective on what's going on in the industry. So. If you were going to kind of discern the difference between those agencies that you've either purchased or not purchased that are, they're growing, they're healthy, they're getting to the next level, and those that are not, what do you see as the difference? What's the difference in behavior, and what's the difference in the agency ownership's behavior and attitude?
Well, I think my answer may not be actually answering your question directly, because when we look at agencies, the two most important things we're looking at is the book of business, the quality of the book of business, and the staffing, because it's very important to have the continuity. Even if the sellers don't stay on, we want to make sure that there's good staff and we keep for retention purposes. But we'll look at the book of business, and more often than not, our pricing is based on if it's a real good book of business, if it's a quality book of business, and we don't have to clean it up, so to speak, we'll pay a lot for that. On the other hand, we look at agencies where the books are not good, and we have bought both, believe me.
Yeah.
But we've gotten very good at cleaning up books. But if we're going to buy a book, an agency where we have to clean the business up, Our price is not going to be, it's not going to be what a lot of sellers expect. So sometimes it'll be that we make an offer because it's what I call a fixer-upper, and it's just not something they're looking to do. A lot of them is just they're just not that good of an agency, or they don't fit.
So in your definition, what's the difference between a good book of business and a bad book of business?
Well, okay, I would say that loss ratios of 60% or less on average, number from 60% down, we're comfortable with. 60 to 70 is borderline.
Uh-huh.
We can clean that up. But 70s or higher on a 3 to 5 year basis, it gets a lot more challenging. And we're looking at an agency right now that's been running about 80% for the last 5 years. It's it's a good size agency.
Uh-huh.
It's about $1 million in income. It's not too bad.
Yeah.
But I would buy that agency, but I would pay half as much as what they think they can get, because it needs a lot of work.
When you look at an agency like that or any other agency, do you also look at their historical retention or policy per customer count?
We do. Uh-huh. We do look at it, but ultimately, and what we also do is we get permission to talk to their companies, and what we do is we just did that on another agency recently. We represent the company, and we spoke with them about this book of business, and they said they just want to get off it. They don't have any interest in staying on it. And even though they know that I can clean it up, they said there were things that they just weren't comfortable with this book. So, you know, we walk away from it because, mm-hmm. you know, obviously it's not just about buying business. It's buying about good business and buying business that we can comfortably improve. But basically it means, you know, kind of getting rid of the substandard business.
Cause right.
You know, any book that you look at, if you're looking at a book with 80% loss ratios, that's where my favorite Pareto principle comes in, the 80-20 rule.
Right.
You know, probably 20% of that book is dragging it down. Sometimes it's a little bit more than that. But in most cases, you might have 70 or 80% of the book that's actually good, but it's the 20 or 30% that's dragging it down. And again, if you can buy it right, because you know you have to either move that business to companies. We have companies that write substandard business. They price it accordingly. Or sometimes we just, you know, try to non-renew some of the business.
Got it. All right.
So it's involved. It's a lot of work, but that's kind of what we do. And the other thing I just want to mention, again, just so our model is very different in another sense, that we don't have what we would call typical producers, where they're outbound there and they're soliciting business.
Right.
We do a lot of marketing, whether it's radio and online and direct mail. And basically my job has always been, and I'm dating myself because I'm saying it's to get the phone to ring, but now it's really
right.
to get the leads in through the internet.
Yeah, okay.
And so... all of our account managers are producers, and we have a processing department that does all the grunt work, all the, you know, checking in policies, mailing them out. So we try to allow our staff to have time to just sell and service an account round, and they don't have to worry about all the piles on their desk, so to speak. You know, even for smaller agencies, which say, well, I can't afford a processing department, that's all, you know, there are companies now that do that on an outsourced basis. And we're big fans of outsourcing. We use Wave. I don't know if you're familiar with them.
Yes.
The retired insurance people. For instance, we have one person that just does all of our commercial certificates, and they mm-hmm. live in Wisconsin or something like that. And incidentally, when our accounting manager, who's been with us for 4 years, lives in Michigan. We've outsourced some of our accounting services. We've been very successful outsourcing a lot of different things.
So
a big fan of that too. And smaller agencies can do that too, very easily. And it's effective. I just looked at an agency that has. 6 employees.
Right.
Two of them are on site, and the other 4 are in. I think they're in China.
Oh, really?
You know?
Okay. So there are a couple of ways to outsource. One is outsourcing through a third party vendor, and the other one is using remote employees. Do you have remote employees, people who don't work at the office but fundamentally work at home?
Well, like I say, one of our key people in our accounting manager lives in Michigan.
Okay.
Working for us for 4 years.
And she's an employee.
Absolutely.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, she comes in periodically. I have another employee that works 3 days in the office, 2 days at home. We have more and more people that are trying to do that, and we try to accommodate them because the technology. For instance, we have an office on Cape Cod in Truro, which is about 2.5 hours from our home office, and we have a Truro employee that is in our home office. She works strictly for that office.
Yeah.
And it's all remote, and nobody knows the difference.
Got it. Okay. And how do you manage the productivity of an employee who works at home?
We have computer software that does a screenshot of every single screen. Every single screenshot for every computer in our agency.
Interesting. Okay.
We also have so we can look at that. Big Brother is watching kind of thing. But we found out one time we had a manager in one of our branches, and this is not an exaggeration. He was spending half of his day playing games on the computer. But we had all the screenshots to prove it. We had another situation where we had two employees that were emailing each. They were next to each other in the same office, but they were emailing each other all day long, talking about their boyfriend.
Yeah.
So that's one way. The other way is the activity reports.
Right.
We know how much, and so we can monitor.
You can do that.
It,
okay. I have two last questions for you. All right. First one, Ellie, is there a number of things that you do to accelerate your organic growth that work really well? You get a lot of referrals. Your retention is certainly respectable. Your policy per customer count is high. What are the things that you do to make sure that those things happen?
Well, we have specific goals for each branch in relation to account rounding. We require each branch to account round a certain number of accounts each month. We do track policies per client,
right,
both agency-wide and branch-wide. And it's interesting because we have some branches that are very much in blue-collar areas, and we have some that are in very wealthy communities. And clearly the policy count, average policies per client, is much higher in the more affluent communities.
Right.
So we look at each branch individually, and we have anywhere from 1.3 policies per client to 2.2, and anywhere in between. But we also we've actually just we're in the process of replacing this person, but we have somebody whose only job is account rounding. They make outbound. We do campaigns, of course, with our Agency Revolution engine, and we're constantly doing that. But we actually have somebody who makes outbound calls to clients. We hired a consultant a few years ago, and I don't know how much money we spent on him and how many months he was involved with us, but we basically walked away with seven words that he taught us, and that's what we live by. And that's, I noticed that, blank, may I ask why? I noticed that we write your auto, but we don't have your homeowners. May I ask why?
Okay.
I noticed that we have your home and auto, but we don't have your umbrella. May I ask why?
Okay.
So you put the onus back on.
Yeah.
So that's what we live by.
And that's worked well for you.
You know, it's like anything.
Yeah.
You know, some employees do it all the time. Others, you got to beat them on the head, and then they still don't do it.
Got it. Okay.
But overall, we're moving in the right direction.
All right. Here's my last question for you, Ellie. Clearly, this is a different industry than it was back when you got into it. Different industry than it was 20 years ago, and really, discernibly, a really different industry than it was 5 years ago. So we've seen all of these trends and forces. There's a new generation, 83 million millennials that are rising up to take over the economy. We've got InsurTech that's flooding into not just the industry in general, but into our property and casualty distribution space. We've got new technologies, changes in consumer behavior. What do you think the future looks like for the independent insurance agency system?
Well, I think, and I don't really like to even say this, but I think it's going to go to some extent the way the travel business went. And, you know, many of the small travel agencies are gone, but the larger agencies that are still here are extremely successful. They're very large and very successful.
Right.
The smaller agencies that, again, in the travel business that have done well have specialized, mm-hmm. You know, whether it's cruises or... So I think on the commercial side, the independent agent, you know, certainly on the mid to large commercial, there's no way they're going anywhere. I just don't see it in the near future. Smaller commercial, we're starting to see to get more automated. We are actually looking into ourselves creating a website that is designed. We're working with one particular company that to direct business to that. It's our agency's business, but directing them to their website and to their staff who will actually write the business, but it'll be our business. And it's just a matter of marketing that website online. So again, we're going to see, there's no question, we're going to see fewer agencies, larger agencies, much more sophisticated agencies. Commercial's going to be stronger than the personal side, mm-hmm. but I think some of the niche agencies are going to do well. It's changing. There's no question about that.
All right. Any final words that you would want to say to the independent agent of today?
Well, it's a great business to be in. I like to call it our little secret. How many businesses can you be in where if you're a good agent, 85 to 90% or more of your customers are just going to renew every year.
Mm-hmm.
But if we've looked at some really bad agencies, really bad, horrible service, and their retention is still 70%. So you can be the worst agent out there, and 70% of your clients are going to come back every year. So, it's that renewal. The renewal is the key word there, and retention. Like I say, if you're good, you're going to come back every year, and that's there's not a lot of businesses. I mean, that model is, you know, Amazon Prime is that model now where they have repeat every year. Pay the $95, you know, mm-hmm. And that's what we have. We've been doing it for way longer than Amazon has, it feels good to be in a business where you can really be there for people when they need you. And I will finish with this. I had a $2.5 million fire at my home 2 years ago. It's been 3 years now since it started. And I was out of my home for 2 years. And I, without insurance or without the right type of insurance, I would have been in big trouble.
Yeah.
And fortunately, I mean, hopefully I have the right type of insurance. But, you know, independent agents, we're going to review, you know, we're not selling mm-hmm. just on price.
Yeah.
Price is a factor, but we do something that's important. The world would not revolve without us, and like I say, it's a great business to be in. And that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Okay, well, Ellie, as always, it was great to catch up with you, and I'm grateful for your willingness to generously share your success and the secrets to what got you from A to B. So, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure, and I just want to throw something back at you. And part of our success is due to you and your people and your organization. And it's been a pleasure working with you.
Thank you. It's very, very generous of you. Thank you so much, and enjoy your day.
You too. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the Connected Insurance Podcast. If you found this episode informative, please share it with your peers and colleagues. Explore the Connected Insurance family of resources for insurance agents and brokers by visiting agencyrevolution.com and clicking media. Subscribe and get updates delivered right to your inbox. New episodes every Wednesday.